Welcome to the True Crime Cafe. I'm Angie.
I'm Becky, and you won't believe the case I have for you today.
What you got for me?
So I have a double murder in South Carolina.
Ooh.
Yes. So, and we are right now on the cusp of the hurricane hitting as we record this, because part of our hurricane prep is making sure you guys have an episode for next week.
That's right.
So that's our dedication.
That's right. That's
yeah.
Right.
So Dana Woods was an 18-year-old girl who worked two jobs to save up for law school. By age 15, she was enrolled in her local college's paralegal program. She was strong-willed and very close to her family, especially her mom and sister. She had a boyfriend, and it sounded like someone else might have been interested in her, but they were just friends. The pastor of Dana's church described her as bubbly and outgoing. Dana never met a stranger. When she had a challenge, her goal was not to meet it, but it was to exceed it. The example one article gave was when Dana's church youth group was going on a ski trip. Dana raised enough money to pay for her trip, and then she went above and beyond to raise money to pay for part of another youth group member's trip, too.
Oh, wow.
So she was an overachiever.
I don't know that she was an overachiever.
Compared to her peers, I think she was an overachiever.
Whereas she is definitely, sounds like she was more empathetic and definitely more of a giver.
Yes, definitely. She definitely gave, you know, you see the memes on social media, give more than you take. She really lived that kind of lifestyle from everything I've read.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her last name right, but June Gary was 4 years older than Dana, but they became immediate besties when they met in high school. They had similar interests, they had similar personalities, and Dana's sister was also good friends with June. In 2012, when this case took place, June was a single parent to a little girl who was around 2 years old. Everything I researched said June was a really good mom who was doing the best she could. She was picking up more hours at her job, and she was looking forward to getting medical benefits and earning enough to move out of her parents' home. June was a bit of a tomboy. She loved fishing. She would bring home catfish that her family could have for dinner. Her dad described her as a tough little gal, especially as a single mom. And comments on the obituary page for her use words like sweet, compassionate, and a good friend.
Okay.
So have you ever been fishing?
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I was raised in the South. What do you think?
So when my husband and I were dating, we used to go fishing all the time.
Uh-huh.
And now he's like, honey, don't you want to go fishing? And I'm like, no, we're married. I don't have to do that anymore.
Right?
I already gotcha. I caught the best one. So.
Aww.
Yeah. So on August 27th, 2012, Dana called her mother. At this point, I'm pretty sure she had graduated and she was looking forward to attending college full time.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she and June were at a fast food restaurant drive-thru. They picked up a couple of friends and they were going to give these friends a ride somewhere.
Okay.
You know, small town life, that's not unusual.
No, it's not.
3 hours later, Dana's mother had not heard from Dana.
Mm-mm.
So she and Dana's stepfather drove up and down all the roads where June and Dana might have been if they had broken down somewhere. Dana's mother contacted the police, who said, big shocker, it's too early to tell, give it time.
Okay, so I know you said this takes place in South Carolina, but where in South Carolina?
Monk's Corner.
Okay, I know where that is.
So, yeah, it's between you and I. And when I was talking to my husband about this case, he goes, oh, we drive through there to go see Angie. I'm like, we might have been at that Burger King. I'm like, yeah, honey, but it's like 10 years later, so we're good. We're not witnesses to anything, so that we know. So Dana was always in contact with her mom, and June was not the type of mom to leave her daughter alone for hours on end, even if it was with her parents. If she wasn't working, she was almost always with her daughter. And this is from what I could tell, like, every article.
Okay.
The first thing the following day, Dana's mom called June's mom to say, hey, the girls never came home. So now both families are searching the back roads. They were still thinking that maybe the girls had had a car accident. And just when everyone was ready to throw in the towel and just, you know, stop looking, just because they'd searched everywhere, like stop looking, not looking for the girls, but stop looking for the accident. Like maybe they broke down. June's father and brother-in-law passed Dana's car on the highway.
Uh-uh.
So Dana's car was a Chevy Metro. She'd had an accident sometime before and a family member did the repairs. The repairs did not include a paint job, leaving two doors a different color than the rest of the car. So it was pretty distinct.
Okay.
When you saw it, you knew it was her car.
I was wondering how they knew it was
her car. The paint job was nothing close. I think it was like gray versus red or so. It was like the
primer versus top coat or Bondo or whatever they call
it. No, because it looked like they got like two doors from the junkyard and just put them on the car.
Oh, okay.
So they replaced the doors with, like, they replaced the doors and the new doors were a completely different color.
Gotcha.
So if the car was gray, like metallic gray, the new door, you know. Okay. The doors are totally different. So it was not Dana driving the car, though. It was some guy they had never seen. Mm-mm. So they took off after the car, but the car sped up. And when they get to a three-way stop, it was nowhere. So they had no idea which way the person had gone. Mm-mm. So the police by now, they finally take it serious enough to start investigating. And they're interviewing the most likely suspects, starting with Dana's boyfriend. The report from Dana's cell phone comes in and it shows some suspicious activity. And because the cell phone pings are within a certain radius, it really can't pinpoint as precise as it does on like fictional TV shows, Law and Order, CSI. It doesn't really work like that in real life.
Nothing ever works like that.
No, unfortunately. I remember seeing an interview with someone. It was an investigator. And he said, it breaks his heart when families are like, but on CSI, they had the DNA back within like 24 hours. What's your problem? Yeah, it doesn't work that way. So in this case, the report widened their search by about 20 miles. So instead of pinpointing it, it actually broadened the search by geographic standards. Security cameras from the fast food restaurant showed Dana's car, but it was hard to see who else was in the car with them. Mm-hmm. And I saw the video and it's like really clear for the front seat, but it doesn't zoom in. So the back seat is just kind of in shadows.
Gotcha.
Meanwhile, on social media, the rumor mill is up and running.
Of course.
Someone claimed that Dana took off to join the Air Force.
Okay.
No, she didn't.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, right. So by now, a few days have passed and the police get a phone call. Someone found a burned out car in the woods in the Francis Marion Forest.
Oh, I know where that is.
Yeah, right. One of the authorities interviewed as part of the ID Channel special about the case said it's not unusual to find burned out cars in the woods in that area.
That's really not.
I know. I had no idea. Okay, this was news to me.
Francis Marion Forest runs along Highway 17 on either side. 33 years ago, I think it was when Hurricane Hugo came through. Mm-hmm. You've seen it just from driving around and stuff. Imagine all of that cleared out.
Oh, wow.
There were very few trees left standing. So what's there now is basically only what's grown back since then.
Oh, wow.
So it went from heavily forested to looked like matchsticks. Like it was bad.
Oh, wow.
To being overgrown again.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual to find crime evidence.
Yeah. Apparently, this is a popular way for criminals to get rid of evidence of their crimes. And like I said, I had no idea.
Okay. So, well, think about it. Because in that area, and for those that don't know, that area, there's nothing there. Like it's not like somebody's going to look out their front window and see you driving into the woods. Like there is nothing there. It is just stretches of trees on either side of you. So
when we left your house the last time we visited, remember that there was a storm coming. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about where we were going to stop for dinner. We ended up not stopping for dinner until we got to, it was Conway, which is closer to my house than yours. Mm-hmm. And it was like an hour and 45 minutes or something. It was crazy because the rain was so hard and there was there wasn't even anywhere to pull off the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
It was, you just drove through the storm and they were, branches on the ground, and we had to drive in the other lane and hope knew there were no cars coming towards us with their lights off. And it was pretty wild. Yeah, it's a pretty unpopulated area.
Yeah.
So authorities went to the site and they found the shell casings around the car and drag marks leading away from the car. Mm. Unfortunately, the drag marks did lead to Dana's murdered body.
Aww.
And when police informed her family, one of the police officers in that ID Channel special said the family just kept asking why.
Right? I mean...
Yeah, because
I would be asking why too.
Very sad situation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, by the end of that day, they still had not found June.
Oh, that's right. June was with her.
June was with her. And what about the other two people in the car?
Yeah, did they drop them off where they were supposed to?
Right.
Because I'm just going to tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
Francis Marion Forest.
Mm-hmm.
Is not in it's Monk's Corner is not right there at it. So how do they end up so far away from where they were?
Right. So, and the people they picked up, the friends, quote unquote friends, were they also victims?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? So there's a lot of questions at this point. Rescue volunteers, dog handlers, and horse riders joined the state wildlife officers, forest rangers, and divers in searching for clues about where the girls might be. The next day, the police got a phone call. A gentleman visiting his family's cemetery plot saw a scrap of fabric hanging from a tree. When he went and looked closer, he saw the body of a young woman who was killed in the same way that Dana had been murdered.
Mm.
This told the police that it was probably June before they even had formal identification from her family.
I mean, it's a reasonable assumption.
Right. And this was about 10 miles from where they found Dana's body, but it was only about a mile from June's house. Although the police had no idea who could have done
it. I'm trying to picture this because they're only about a mile from June's house, but June lived in Monk's Corner?
Yes.
Okay, so they weren't that far out of the city. I was thinking that they were like way far out of Monk's Corner.
No, it was just right like on that side of the state forest.
Gotcha.
Although the police had no idea who could have done it, they did want to talk to one person in particular. Arthur Ray Ray Chavez allegedly wanted to have a relationship with June. And in police footage of an interview with Ray Ray, he admits that he first met June at a party a few years before. The police told him that they thought he might have info to lead him to someone who might know what happened to Dana and June. When they asked what he did that weekend, Ray Ray said that because he didn't have a job, he was just laying around watching TV and talking to his cousin, Caleb Matlock, on the phone. So the police didn't have enough evidence to hold Ray Ray on anything, much less charge him with anything. But they did have enough to take a picture of him to put in a photo lineup. Then they had the family member of June's family who saw him driving the car look at the lineup, and he pointed Ray Ray out immediately. He was like, he used to work with June, but that wasn't them driving the car. Next, police interviewed Dana's boyfriend and another man, Rodney, a volunteer firefighter who was known to have a crush on Dana. Rodney was super cooperative, and he had a very strong alibi because he was on duty at the firehouse the night Dana and June went missing. And from everything I've read about the case, Dana's boyfriend was super cooperative, and he even tried to help the police in any way he could.
Okay.
Anytime he heard anything, he went right to the police with it.
Okay.
And anyone who knows volunteer firefighters, they are normally 99% of the time so obsessed with firefighting that nothing can distract them. I say this as someone who married a volunteer firefighter who's in a career and is now retired. He's still obsessed with firefighting. Like, that's it. Like, nothing will get in the way. And like, on his duty nights, I knew if he was pulling firehouse duty, that was the night that all my girlfriends came over and we watched, you know, chick flicks and made popcorn, and one of them would stay over in our guest room. And that was that kind of night because I knew I wasn't going to hear from him. If he wasn't on a fire call, he might call and tell me goodnight. That was it.
Maybe.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Monk's Corner residents were looking over their shoulders and taking a closer look at their neighbors, wondering who could have done this to Dana and June. Parents started giving stricter curfews, and people were worried because, let's face it, they had a killer on the loose. It could have been anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Then police got another tip from someone who worked with Caleb's girlfriend. This woman said Caleb's girlfriend came into work talking about details about June and Dana's murders that were not in the newspapers. So when police went to talk to her, she said that Caleb was the father of her children, but she would go down to the police station to answer some questions first because she asked her mom to take care of the kids. So while one officer escorted her to the police car, the other went inside to let the mom know that they were going to bring her daughter back when they were done. Mm-hmm. They just had some questions about Caleb. And the mom is like, well, he just went out the back door. So the police officer goes out the door. No Caleb. He is gone. The police officer gets on his radio and calls all hands on deck.
Okay.
And let me tell you, South Carolina does not mess around when they call for like a be on the lookout and they need assistance and all that. Because a few weeks ago, police were questioning someone in a murder investigation in Conway, the town I mentioned before, which is about 20 miles from my house. And the person being questioned took off, led them on a high speed chase, crashed his vehicle down the street from my house. I was on my way home from Conway and barely missed being in the police chase.
Oh,
which
wow.
I'm kind of disappointed about because that sounds super fun. Just okay. It doesn't, you know, not really fun for anybody involved. But when I had to go out an hour later, there was a fire truck, an ambulance, at least 20 police cars at the end of my street. So I can only imagine everybody reconvening in that area just to look for Caleb now. The police didn't take very long to find him. He was behind a dumpster trying to change his clothes, and he had the murder weapon in his backpack.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. When the police took Caleb in for questioning, he admitted that he grew up with June and they dated in the past. He said he did not know Dana very well, but he had seen Dana hanging out with June before.
Well, if he didn't know her very well, why did he kill her?
Right. On the night of the murders, Caleb said June had called him because one of his kids was having a birthday party and he and Ray Ray had met up with June and Dana, but he didn't want to talk about anything else that night. So there were a lot of holes in his story.
Sounds like it.
After talking around the situation for for a bit. Caleb said there was a third guy there, someone he didn't know who was in the vehicle with them. And police knew this wasn't true because they could tell there were only two people in that surveillance video in the back seat. When they pressed Caleb for more information, he lawyered up.
Of course.
So police went to Ray Ray. As we've discussed in previous episodes, police can lie during questioning. That's totally legal.
They can.
And if that's what it takes to get someone to tell the truth, I am all for it. Because I have done this with my children. Like, your brother already told me, so you may as well admit it. And they will give each other up. That's how they are. Yeah. You've got kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Police went to Ray Ray and said, hey, Caleb gave you up, so you might as well tell us what you know. And Ray didn't want to tell anything at first, but when he realized the police had a few details, it just opened the floodgates and he was like, okay, I'll tell you. Caleb offered the girls $50 to take them out to the woods to look for his wallet. Once they were out there, he planned to rob them and steal Dana's car. And it sounded like he wanted to sell Dana's car so he could use that money to fix up his own vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Ray Ray said he was, and I quote, all doped up. And he said he had no idea that Caleb would murder the girls. And it sounded like if Ray Ray had known that he would not have participated in it. But still, I'm sorry, you're planning on robbing someone. It's a crime. It's still a crime.
Yeah.
In an article on the Sportskeeda website, it said that Caleb Matlock pleaded guilty to 2 counts of murder and 2 counts of possession of a firearm during the commission of a violent crime, armed robbery, and third-degree arson a week before his trial began. And a different article in the Berkeley Observer said that he took a deal to plead guilty and reduced his sentence to 55 years to avoid a trial and the possibility of a longer sentence. And yet another article on the WCSC Live 5 website said that Caleb must serve at least 80% of his sentence before being considered for parole. And if this had gone to trial, Ray Ray was going to testify against him.
Okay.
So during his sentencing hearing for the murders of June and Dana, Caleb said, truth is, this eats me up inside. It always has. Sorry doesn't even cut it, but I am. I'm really sorry. I just want it to be over. I'm going to live the rest of my life in hell, whether it's living or not. It's been hell. I'm sorry. Yeah. For what it's worth, you know.
Yeah.
As the family of a murder victim, if the person had done it, who stayed quiet through the entire trial, if he had stood up and said, hey, I did it, I'm sorry, it would not have helped me personally. So
yeah,
I'm not saying that his apology fell on deaf ears. I'm just saying that I don't give it a lot of weight.
Yeah.
At the sentencing, June's sister called Caleb out for not being able to say why he killed June and Dana. And June's father spoke at this hearing and he said life in prison was too good for Caleb and that he should just be hung. Dana's mother said, as I've waited these last 2 years, 7 months, and 26 days, I have only wondered why. Why did you pick these two beautiful girls? June was a single mom who was just trying to raise her daughter right and doing a good job at it. Dana, who had just turned 18 2 months prior, was close to finishing her paralegal degree and was on her way to law school with a 3.8 GPA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My why will never be answered because you and Matlock decided to plea. And that's fine because that may have saved both our families additional pain.
That sucks.
It does. And going back to what Caleb said in court, I have to wonder how much it really eats him up and how sorry he really is. And here's why.
He's sorry he got caught.
That's my opinion too, because Caleb has tried to escape prison twice and succeeded once. He was caught soon after. If I was guilty of a crime and giving a prison sentence, and if I was truly sorry and it was quote unquote eating me up inside and I was going to quote unquote going to live the rest of my life in hell, whether it's living or not, I would not be trying to escape my punishment.
No, he wasn't sorry that he committed the crime. He was sorry he got caught.
Those are my feelings also. So Ray Ray pleaded guilty to 2 counts of lesser charges of voluntary manslaughter, 2 counts of armed robbery, 2 counts of possession of a weapon during the commission of a violent crime, and was sentenced to 25 years in prison. During his sentencing, Dana's mother said, you might not have pulled the trigger that night, but you might as well have. You knew we were out searching for Dana and June, but you did nothing to come forward and help us find them. You could have told us where they were, and you might not be sitting here today. You two didn't just ruin your own lives. You scarred the hearts of parents, grandparents, siblings, and friends.
Mm.
And it's true. It really affected their entire community. Everyone who knew those girls.
I'm sure.
And even people who didn't, because like, if I had lived in the town of Monk's Corner when this happened, mm-hmm. as a parent, it would still be lock your doors. Don't mm-hmm. give friends rides. Don't do, I would have been more of a helicopter parent than I am right now, probably. Mm-hmm. So speaking of the community contributed memorial funds to help pay for Dana and June's funerals. There is a Facebook memorial page for the girls that's still up. And in the community section, there were posts from that time period where people asked where to drop off diapers for June's little girl. The community had a music benefit, a photographer did photo sessions to help raise money, and at least two restaurants held fundraisers with proceeds going to the families. And I think this says a lot about Monk's Corner, because where a tragedy might have ripped other towns apart, especially where the murderers were two hometown boys, these residents rallied to support the victims and their families.
Yes.
And it's been 10 years, but Monk's Corner hasn't forgotten. The biggest shock was that it wasn't strangers who killed these girls, but members of their own community. Mm-hmm. Evil living under their noses, and they had no idea.
Yeah.
We've covered about 60 cases now, and it's not unusual for us to find in our research that many parents become super involved in the case when their child goes missing or is murdered. And this was no exception. I saw posts from Dana's mom on more than one public forum, and in one she wrote, "Thank you for all for being so respectful and not posting anything mean that would cause emotional damage to our families."
Aww.
Yeah. And I think it's important that we mention this because for any true crime buffs that like to do their own research or comment online, no matter how you feel about a case, it's important to be respectful, because there's a website that mentions the case where someone in my family was murdered, and there are people who use the comment section to make jokes about the surnames of a couple people involved in the case. And it's like, why? Yeah, their surname is a funny word, but do you need to make an innuendo about it? Mm-mm. Also, I saw in the news recently that some family members of Jeffrey Dahmer's victims watched the Netflix special, which recently came out. I haven't personally seen it, but the family member said that it was like living the nightmare all over again. Yeah. So even if it's respectful, I know that you and I always try to do this. We have to remember that the audience for whatever you post, say in a podcast, etc., could include someone the victim knew, like a family member, friend, or other. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to echo Dana's mother in saying thank you to everyone who's respectful and not posting anything mean that would cause emotional damage to survivors in true crime situations.
Yes.
So, and that is my two murders in South Carolina.
That is very interesting.
Stay caffeinated.
And join us next time for another cup of crime.